broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the broadcast for February the 28th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide, and absolutely we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. Those are bloody and messy and don't turn out very well. Thank heavens the founding fathers were successful, but it's certainly a once in a very, very, very long time success rate, and we're grateful for that success. But now that they put the framework together and they gave their sweat, their blood, their tears, their fortunes, their sacred honors, their lives, we don't need to go to revolution, folks. That's why we reject a revolution. We stand for a peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, ladies and gentlemen. And man, have we got a great guest for you. All right. Normally, Pete Sepp joins us from the National Taxpayers Union Monthly. And he's busy. He's tied up. But we got a great guest instead. Her name is Maddie Doppler. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, Maddie.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Am I saying your name right?
Doppler is how you spell my last name.
All right, Maddie Doppler, ladies and gentlemen. And she's the Senior Fellow for Fiscal Policy of the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. And she's also, believe it or not, the Economy Committee Co-Chair for CPAC. So she's also going to be speaking tomorrow at CPAC. So we'll get into what your speech will be about here in a few minutes. But tell me a little bit about your position at NTU first, will you?
So I am the Senior Fellow for Fiscal Policy at NTU. And what that means is I'm aware of many hats. But one of my main responsibilities is really to go out and preach the good word on media, at events nationwide. I try to serve as a spokesperson for both NTU and our mission, being the taxpayers' lobbyists, how we like to bill ourselves in Washington, D.C., but also talking about fiscal policy and what the appropriate responses are to the different economic challenges that we face here in D.C. And NTU, of course, works both in D.C. and in state governments all over the country, trying to secure the appropriate fiscal policy for taxpayers and ultimately increase transparency and accountability in federal and state finance so that taxpayers know their tax dollars are being well spent.
Amen. That's great work. And you know, what's kind of funny is there's a radio commercial here in my local market. It's a company called Chain Company, and they're in the jewelry business. And so they always end and say, "You have a friend in the jewelry business." Well, man, now, ladies and gentlemen, you got a friend in the tax business, somebody who actually wants to have accountability and lower your taxes, right?
That's exactly right. So we both have a foundation side of the organization, which does research on the subject of taxation and fiscal policy. But we also have an advocacy arm, which tries to get the federal government and state governments to reform their tax codes in a way that are taxpayer friendly. We work closely to get the Tax Reform Act passed at the end of 2017. And since then, we have been doing a lot of work trying to educate taxpayers about what the changes were that happened to the tax code in 2017, how that affects you in 2018 and beyond, and, of course, what Congress should do to continue to reform the tax code so our taxes are fair, flatter, and more easily understood by the average American.
All right. I believe that the tax reform that was done was far, far, far from perfect. But I also believe that it did move the needle towards liberty. It did move the needle towards simplification and less taxes. It did a lot of good. However, now there's all kinds of articles coming out now that the Democrats have control of the House and everything else, where they're basically trying to say, hey, this loophole was closed. Everybody's taxes are going up. This is happening. That's happening. I believe we've got nothing but propaganda in the media on a lot of this.
Well, politics is a game of inches, right? So you're not going to get full bore everything you want, in particular when you're doing tax reform. That muscle here in D.C. had atrophied. We hadn't done tax reform in 31 years. So it required a massive education effort for politicians, many of whom weren't even engaged in politics the last time we did tax reform, getting them accustomed to the ideas that were necessary to reform the tax code. So you're right, there's still plenty of work to be done. But there were a number of critical components in that tax reform bill that I think are important to emphasize. And I'll return to the tax refund issue in a moment, but just top line, in 2017, when the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was passed, getting the income tax brackets to change, lowering them significantly for the middle class was certainly a huge win. And then a doubling of the standard deduction. A doubling of the standard deduction is not only important because it puts more tax dollars back in the taxpayer's pocket, but it makes your taxes more simple. We now have 9 in 10 taxpayers who will simply take the standard deduction rather than waiting through itemization and trying to save receipts and trying to figure out exactly what their tax burden will be at the end of the year. More Americans have more clarity on what their tax burden is year over year, and it's because they can now take the standard deduction because that is the most effective way for them to keep the most of their tax dollars.
Wow. You think Congress will do anything now, or are we just gridlocked for the duration?
Well, Washington being what it is, one of the challenges of the tax reform bill is that part of the changes made in the code are only temporary. So those individual changes that I just mentioned, the brackets being lowered for income payers, the fact that you have a doubling of the standard deduction, those all start to expire in 2025. So Congress does need to act in order to make those sides of the code permanent, you know, and in Washington, it takes a crisis to act, so I don't expect activity to make those parts of the code permanent in the near term, but I certainly think it bears repeating time and time again for when the time that vote comes. And I'm optimistic that when push comes to shove, Congress will extend the life of those tax cuts, simply because inertia works in our favor here. You'll recall that the Bush tax cuts enacted first into law in 2001 and 2003 had the same problem. They were only put into law for 10 years because of budget rules here in D.C. And ultimately, even though there was a lot of jostling between Democrats and Republicans at that time when they began to expire, President Obama and congressional Democrats voted to extend the life permanently of those tax cuts. All in all, making about 85% of the Bush tax cuts permanent. So even though Democrats like to talk a big game about tax hikes, when it comes to voting for them, the record is a little bit more spotty.
What do you say to that, Kurt? You'll just be gridlock going on?
Well, in some ways, I'm for gridlock in Congress. But, I mean, of course, because the problem is so many times our choices are gridlock or something bad. At least when it comes to the National Taxpayers Union, oh man, ladies and gentlemen, we've watched them for years. I mean, we've been grateful to be invited to many of their events, broadcasting from there, and watched them and seen their good hard work. And like she says, like Maddie says, there's politics is a game of inches, she understands the principles. What I've been able to see, I mean, most of us are like the one guy that said, "Hey, I want patience and I want it now," we want everything fixed right now, and that's the way I find myself many times. And yet, I realize that if we continue to work and push on the offense instead of always being on the defense. But like you talked about, that muscle of tax reform or tax, just improvement in the whole tax system had been kind of atrophied, and now it's been brought out, and there's sure a lot more to do.
When you're playing defense in basketball and you deflect the ball and they struggle and then they get the ball back, then you're like, do it again. Deflect it again. And one of the things that Rand Paul said was, hey, we're just getting warmed up. This bill's far from perfect. But the reason that I'm for it is because it opens the discussion and it accomplishes some. And now all we got to do is work for more. I mean, isn't that the right attitude about this?
I certainly think it is. And I think that when you look at the tax reform bill, the individual side is so important because Americans deserve and need that tax relief. But the other thing that we haven't talked about is what happened on the business side of things. Lowering the corporate income tax rate down to 21% was crucial to get the American economy humming again. And it did so because the American economy had been held captive by a completely uncompetitive corporate tax rate. We had the highest corporate tax rate in the developed world. We couldn't compete worldwide. And the result was that there was no capital investment here. Workers didn't have a raise for 10 years. Excuse me. So by lowering that corporate tax rate, what we have done is we've created a competitive environment. And that's a down payment on the American economy that will have dividends for workers and businesses for years to come. The corporate side of the tax code was made permanent in that law. So we won't have to have a fight over that again unless Democrats pick one. And I certainly expect to see Democrats try to raise that corporate tax rate again. But they will then have to answer for why they want to put a boot on the neck of the economic recovery, because that certainly has been critical to making sure that workers start to feel the impact of the rising tide of an economy that's working again. So continuing the conversation on what we can do to make the United States economy competitive is so important. The Trump administration has done a great job with this, both in terms of tax reform and regulatory reform, getting the government out of the way so that businesses can make the right decisions to invest in their workers and provide for their consumers has really shown to be an effective way to lead the way back to prosperity.
All right, when we get back, I want to talk about what options are really being discussed behind the scenes? Because I believe that we don't have the perfect economy, far from. But I believe we have the best economy under Donald Trump than we've had in a long time, in my lifetime, in fact. Let's talk to Maddie in seconds about this, NTU.org. Hang tight, folks.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Maddie Doppler with us. She's with National Taxpayers Union, NTU. And she's the Senior Fellow for Fiscal Policy over there. She's also the Economy Committee Co-Chair for CPAC. We'll get into her CPAC speech tomorrow. She'll be speaking at CPAC in a little bit here. But I believe that President Trump has done a lot to deregulate, and it's really created a boom for the economy. And it's far from perfect, but with deregulation and tax cuts, hey, man, its fruits are evident everywhere. And it's not perfect. We got a long way to go. I get it. But I'm also not going to ignore the gains. There's a lot of them, and we can't overlook them. We've got to acknowledge them, celebrate them, and then double down for another three-pointer, if you will. And I think that's what we need to focus on. What options are on the table to really do that? And who's pushing what? And what's kind of going on behind the scenes with that effort? Because I agree with Rand Paul, we got to take it to the next level now.
Well, that is certainly true. And we obviously face a different environment now than we did in the first 2 years of the Trump administration, with a divided government and Democrats controlling the House of Representatives. But I do think that having a divided government can still be instructive. For one, there have been a number of bipartisan efforts that the Trump administration has celebrated that passed last year while we were in a divided government. We passed a major overhaul to Dodd-Frank financial regulations that unleashed some of the small and community bank regulations that were nonsensical for those institutions that should hopefully create a lot more capital in communities across the country. There was criminal justice reform. There was legislation passed to address the opioid epidemic. So there are a number of things that have gotten done in Washington that are bipartisan in nature, that are good for the country, and that should be celebrated. You don't hear a lot about that sometimes in the mainstream media because it's always about who's against whom and at what point. But I do think that those are worth mentioning. Now, moving forward, what does that mean? Does that mean we'll still have bipartisan accomplishments to speak of? Well, that depends on how much the Democrats want to play ball with a Republican president. So far, what we've seen that has motivated a lot of Democrats' thinking has been this recalcitrance to give anything that looks like a win to the president. Now, as we get further into the year, there will be some difficult decisions that need to be made. The debt limit, the expiration of the debt limit starts tomorrow, actually, on March 1st. The Treasury will take extraordinary measures in order to extend that debt limit. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, said this week that they think the Congress won't have to raise the debt limit until probably September or October. But what that does is it sets the debt limit up to coincide directly with the next budget fight, because the fiscal year for the federal government ends at the end of September. So I would keep an eye on that conversation. Democrats, as we talked about before, will certainly be demanding some sort of policy changes in exchange for raising the debt limit. I expect that we will see them demand to increase the corporate tax rate once again. So that will, of course, stifle some of the competitive advantage the United States has had since passing tax reform. And they will certainly call for more spending, as they are wont to do. Republicans will have a long road ahead of them to make the case for restraining spending, and I would encourage them to do so. I think that there's been a lot of leadership, particularly on the Senate side. You mentioned Rand Paul. Senator Perdue has been very vocal on this issue as well, from Georgia, that there needs to be a rethinking of the institutional bias towards spending. So we stop some of the ways that taxpayer dollars go out the door on autopilot, and we force Congress to do its constitutional role in reviewing that spending and scrutinizing it to make sure every tax dollar is going towards the objective that it is meant to accomplish. So I hope that Congress takes up some of those responsibilities.
Amen. I kind of like the idea that Rand Paul has, the penny budget plan, that just simply says, hey, guys, let's just trim a penny at a time. Surely we can. And it's not a lot. And at first glance, you would say, well, that's not even enough, Sam. That's a waste of time. But my response to that is, what you're doing is they have these projected increases. And then when they say, well, we're not going to do the projected increase, we're going to save money, what they're really doing is spending more, but it's less than the projections. So it appears to be less, but it's all a big game, but it's really spending more. And what the penny plan does is guarantee that we spend a penny less, not more. So it stops the more discussion instantly, but it only trims slightly to where it's like, hey, we have time to make the changes that we need. One of the things we can't do is just crash the plane on the altar of good, right? We got to be very careful to say, hey, you know what? We know we need changes, but changes on a dime are bad. Changes that are planned and methodical and intentional are good. And that's what I think this accomplishes. So it stops that belligerence of that continued upward trend, pretending we're saving money when we're not. But it also actually starts to tighten the belt in ways that can be planned and methodical. And what do you think?
Yeah, my my former boss, Kathy McMorris Rogers, who's a member of Congress from Washington State, had a genius idea. She introduced legislation that was called the Unauthorized Spending Accountability Act, so the USA Act. So very patriotic, but it was a very simple piece of legislation. And what it said was that if money is going out the door, if money is being appropriated by Congress, it needs to have an authorization that says it's legally allowed to be spent.
So let me kind of just stop you for a second and say it's like an accounting how for every line item. If you're going to audit it, you better have a backup for it, folks.
That's exactly right. So in United States finance, authorizing committees have a responsibility to authorize dollars before the appropriations committee lets the money actually go and be spent. And what we've seen is these authorizations for programs have lapsed, sometimes by months, but sometimes by decades. And yet appropriators continue to fill those accounts with taxpayer dollars. So what this bill said was enough of that. But it did so in a smart way. It did so on a rolling basis that forced the authorizing committees to do their work, so they couldn't come hat in hand to the appropriators and say, oh, well, we don't have time, or, you know, we can't let this program expire without having a debate about it. They had time to have those debates. But what it did was it said Congress needs to do its job. It needs to scrutinize spending, assess whether or not it's necessary, and then if it's not necessary, make that decision to end it once and for all. For too long, the autopilot way that government spending has been adjudicated has allowed taxpayer dollars to go out the door without any transparency, and that doesn't benefit anyone, least of all the people who are supposed to be benefiting from that government spending to begin with, because we don't even know if those tax dollars are accomplishing their means. So that's certainly a common sense exercise that I would hope Congress would take another stab at now that we have a new Congress, a new opportunity to be talking about these ideas. Things that eventually revert the bias towards spending, though they may seem small in the near term, have the power to stop the rising tide of our federal debt and our federal spending practices that we know right now, absent any reform, are on the road to bankruptcy.
Kurt, what do you think of that? I think spending cuts is the second thing that needs to happen, because if we start spending less, then it's easy to push for more tax breaks, right? It's hard when you got expenditures and you're just pushing for more tax breaks. Everybody's like, oh, man, we can't do this. But if you can reduce the spending appropriately and then say, hey, tax breaks naturally happen, don't they, Curtin?
Well, it seems to me that it's a no-brainer. The other thing I wanted to bring up, since we have the tax expert with us, Sam and I, over the years, of course, we do the best we can to try to fix the whole world. From our point of view, and I'm sure you feel the same way, Maddie, one of the best examples of a tax solution that we've heard over the years was from a man named Charles Collins. He's a former Republican Party presidential candidate back in the 90s, and he did extensive research with a number of assistants, and he basically said, look, we could replace all the taxes, state, federal, county, everything, with a simple transaction tax that would be applicable to hedge funds, the stock market, everything. And you could free the American people in so many ways. You still would, fund every entity. It's just that they wouldn't have any cost to collections or anything else. It would just be all done in one simple thing. Have you ever heard of that idea, Maddie?
That is certainly an idea that has been bandied about more recently in European countries, where they think financial transaction taxes are a good way to go about taxing the rich, because the argument goes the rich have a lot of financial transactions. I think that one of the difficulties, I shouldn't say one of, the premier difficulty when we talk about reforming the tax code in such a way that would get rid of our current income tax structure is the guarantee that the income tax structure would actually disappear. We hear this a lot in the conversation about consumption taxes, implementing a fair tax or even a carbon tax. The promise is always that, well, we would phase out the income tax structure as a way to make sure that the tax burden isn't doubled on the average American. I would view any proposal skeptically that doesn't immediately zero out the preceding tax burden before replacing it with a new one. That is something that I think we've seen a lot of.
All right, hang tight. We're going to come back. I want to talk about your speech.
All right.
And your speech is going to be at CPAC tomorrow. CPAC's this weekend, ladies and gentlemen. That's where a lot of the movers and shakers appear. We want to give you an inside scoop on it. We'll do it in seconds. We're talking about NTU, National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. And then we'll let you fly. Thanks so much for your patience. Hang tight, everybody. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump in flight back to the United States ahead of schedule after his summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un ends without the two leaders reaching a deal to end the North's nuclear weapons program. The president saying as he leaves Vietnam,
basically, they wanted the sanctions lifted in their entirety. And we couldn't do that.
Economic growth in the United States in the fourth quarter of 2018 coming in better than expected. The Commerce Department says the GDP rose 2.6%. Analysts were expecting to see growth of 2.2% for the last 3 months of 2018. Meanwhile, more Americans are filing for unemployment benefits as the Labor Department says there were 225,000 first-time claims last week, up from 216,000 the previous week. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE, 833-34-BIBLE.
A political operative at the center of an election fraud dispute in North Carolina is now under arrest, as we hear from USA Radio's Wendy King.
Leslie McCrae Dowless is facing charges related to his work in 2016 and 2018 elections. Among other things, he's accused of paying people to illegally collect absentee ballots at last fall's 9th congressional district election that was apparently won by a Republican. The North Carolina State Election Board has now ordered a new election.
A Florida doctor is going to be okay after being shot by a patient in a wheelchair last night. Officials say 59-year-old Larry Ray Bond, a double amputee and U.S. Army veteran, opened fire at the West Palm Beach VA Medical Center while he was being taken to the emergency room. The doctor shot while trying to restrain the man. Apple is laying off at least 200 people in its self-driving car program. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
All right, we got to cut spending, that's for sure, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you that right now, the sooner the better. Bring it on. What can I do to help? There's a lot of good ideas out there, from the Charles Collin plan to the Penny plan of Rand Paul to other congressmen and senators doing a phenomenal job. And I think what we ought to do is we ought to have a simple bill that says, hey, every line item you spend, you better provide constitutional context for your authority and to even be involved there. But that's just me. Maddie Dupler with us, ladies and gentlemen, and she is doing a great job, not only at NTU.org, National Taxpayers Union, not only in her own consulting and relationship building around the country and building groups that want to save money and obey the supreme law of the land and reduce taxes. But now she's going to be speaking at CPAC this Friday. So tomorrow, be ready, folks. What are you going to talk about, Maddie?
So I am on a panel that is actually a live radio show from the main stage of CPAC, and we'll be talking about the Trump economy. We'll be talking about the economy today, how it compares to other economies worldwide, and really why public policy makes the difference. We talked a little bit about it earlier on the show today about the tax code, making sure that we have a competitive tax code so that American businesses can compete here and abroad. That, of course, has been a crucial component of the economic story that Americans are now experiencing. But deregulation, of course, plays a huge role as well, making sure you get the government out of the way so private businesses can make the right decisions for their employees and for their consumers. And then, you know, my perspective on things, I'm a little bit of an eternal optimist, and that puts me at odds sometimes with other economic thinkers. But we hear so many people talk constantly about when the next recession is going to happen and how we need to be prepared. And don't get me wrong, you need to be prepared for any economic condition. But I also don't see much value in constantly trying to swat down the good economic news when it comes across the radar. And so, you know, even today we had economic data released that was released late because the government shut down, but it gave us our first reading on the last quarter of 2018 and economic growth there. And what we saw was Q4 of 2017 to Q4 of 2018, 3.1% growth. That averages out to 2.9% growth for the entire year. And if you'll recall, at the beginning of the Trump administration, we were told 3% growth was impossible. It could never happen. It's a fantasy because we've been living in a world where 1.5% growth was the new normal. And there you have it. The right public policy makes a lot of the difference. And hopefully we continue to see changes to public policy in the future that keep American growth strong and allow the average American to continue to benefit from that.
But they lied.
Who lied?
The people that say that we could never achieve that. They lied.
That's right. And this, again, this speaks to...
Now, let me just stop you for a quick second and say this. Maddie, the reason I say they lied is because if they literally just did their best and thought that it couldn't happen, they would come out blatantly and say, I'm so delighted, I stand corrected, this is wonderful. But they're not doing that. They're doubling down in avoidance of the reality. And that's what makes me believe they lied, not just missed the boat.
Yeah, to me, I think it's both sides of that coin. One, when you are someone who believes the government can create growth rather than just confiscate wealth from the rest of private enterprise, I can understand how you'd have a bleak view of the future, because government doesn't create growth. There is only so much government can do to prop up an economy. So if that is your way of thinking about the world, I can appreciate why you think 3% growth is out of reach. Now, someone like me who thinks free enterprise offers the way forward and the innovative, the ability for entrepreneurs in the private marketplace to innovate is what creates wealth. The options are limitless, and that's why I'm a little bit more of an optimist than some of my other friends here in D.C. You know, I thought that if you watch the president's State of the Union address, it was disheartening that one side of the aisle couldn't stand and cheer when the president mentioned the lowest unemployment numbers in the better part of half a century. I thought that that indicated a kind of jaded understanding of the world that really our politics could use a lot less of. So my hope is that as we continue to see positive economic numbers, and this is not just for one part of society, people who the lowest 10% on the wage earner scale are the people who have seen the highest increase in their wages, the highest increase since 2000 in this economy. It's my hope that politicians across the aisle can start to recognize that that's a darn good thing for Americans, and we should have more of that.
Yeah, and I don't think government creates anything, but I do think the government can deregulate and create a level playing field and get the heck out of the way and spend less. And in that, they can make a tremendous difference to let the greatest economic engine ever built rock and roll on 12 cylinders, sister.
That's exactly right. The options are limitless. And that is the beauty to me of what we look at today. There is, as we mentioned before, public policy isn't perfect. Our tax code isn't perfect. There's a lot of things about this world that aren't perfect. But to stand here and look around and not be able to acknowledge that we still live at the apex of human flourishing, to me, is a very discouraging outlook on life. You can both acknowledge that we have come a far way from where we are thanks to the ingenuity of the human race. And we still have a lot more that we can explore and a lot more that we can do. To me, like, that is, I think, the appropriate way to look at this time and place in history. And especially, you know, I'm in my early 30s. I came of age during the recession. There's a lot of young people out there who are just now starting to understand what wealth accumulation feels like and what success feels like. We need to help these people educate and understand their role in this economy and the vast amount of opportunity that is available to them when the economy is bigger, stronger, and offers more opportunity to all.
Maddie, thank you so much for all that you do for the sacred cause of liberty. Thank you. Keep up the good fight. What show are you going to be on? What show is tomorrow live from CPAC?
John Batchelor will be hosting the radio show that I'll be on. And I will be on a panel with Liz Peek from The Hill and Selena Zito from The Washington Examiner, who, of course, has a book out about kind of the Trump economy and the voters that propelled Trump to the White House. So it should be a very good discussion. We're on at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon Eastern time.
Is anybody going to bring up going back to constitutional currency? If we had honest money at the core of this thing, then we could have a real economic engine.
We'll see. There's a lot of debate about the Fed right now and its role in our current economic environment. So that will certainly get some play over the four-day event that is CPAC.
I think somebody needs to use the term honest weights and measures. That's biblical. And it is the core of the supreme law of the land. And using anything but literally is violating the law right now, right?
That's exactly right. So, you know, the conversation could take us anywhere. We've got, I think, 45 minutes for the show tomorrow. So who knows where it will take us.
All I'm telling you is I hope somebody gets that done, because if we really want the greatest economic engine to be great again, if we really want to unleash it, it starts with honest money, in my humble opinion. I agree there's a lot of other great things we can do, but to some degree we're tinkering around the edges unless we literally double down on the honest money discussion and prevent them from creating money out of thin air, and that will be the greatest reduction on spending we could ever have.
Well, you did see that with the Fed chairman in front of the Senate and House Banking and Financial Services Committees this week. He was asked about the economic theory that this modern monetary theory that you can just print money and deficits don't matter. And he said, that's a lot of nonsense. So we do have, I think, a good conversation about whether or not deficits and spending matter. And the hope then is that the members who are responsible for those decisions start to take those consequences seriously and start making the right spending decisions with taxpayer dollars.
I don't know if it's Big Lee or Big League, but I'm telling you right now, it matters Big Lee and it matters Big League on if we have honest money and if we reduce spending and if we create fiscal responsibility. What do you say to that?
I say amen.
Hey, do you wear a Make America Great Again hat?
I don't wear a Make America Great Again hat, but that's only because it messes with my hair.
All right. Well, I'll encourage you to wear one of those. And there you go. Thanks, Maddie. We appreciate you.
I'll see plenty of them this weekend at CPAC, I'm sure.
Godspeed. Thank you, ma'am.
Take care.
There she goes, Kurt. Fill in for Pete Sepp. How do you like that? I mean, every time the guy gets on the radio or has one of his support folks or partners and people on the radio, I mean, it's just tremendous radio because they're focusing on the things that actually move the needle, Kurt.
It's so refreshing, and it gives me hope to know that they're there working on things. And, you know, hats off to them, even if you don't wear a hat or hats on, as she said, with Make America Great Again.
Well, she sounds like she's for the America, Make America Great Again hats, even if she's not wearing one, Kurt.
She does.
You know what I mean?
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a woman that's actually kind of Trump. What's up with that, Kurt?
Yeah, I mean, doesn't she know she's supposed to hate him if she's a woman?
I think she represents, though, the majority of women in America, believe it or not, Kurt.
Exactly right.
That's what I think, personally. I really do.
I mean, imagine.
I mean, I don't hear many women going off against President Trump, really. Now, I agree that many of us are saying, hey, some of his mistakes in the past aren't good. We're not defending them in any way.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that we don't believe in a future and a changed man. You know, sometimes when the mantle of president of the greatest country on the face of the earth, the leader of the free world, when you get that mantle, Kurt, I think a lot of times it puts people into a reflective mode where they're going, hey, I'm going to look at my life. I'm going to look at who I am. This position's daunting. I'm going to. And I think oftentimes God can give them somewhat of a change of heart, somewhat of a different view than they might normally be as a person. I think there's a greater mantle there. And there's something to it. Even Barack did better in office than out. I know that's not saying much, but hey, I'm just saying. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about women that aren't Trump's friends. They're pretty hostile. And I think they're illegal. This is Liberty Roundtable Live.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get co-certified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this. The Kosher Certified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities. And it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC, Start meaning it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
All right, before we leave the topic, the U.S. economy grew much faster than expected in the fourth quarter, huh, Kurt?
Well, that's exactly right, Sam.
Hate
but
that news.
That's one of those things that's not going to be brought out too much.
Sadly, you know
what
you're
I mean?
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
But we're going to bring it out because we're delighted.
Well, you know, the thing is, Sam, as far as I can tell, it's good for every color of the rainbow person. It grew for black people, white people,
yes,
green
sir.
People, brown people.
See what a racist
yellow
you are?
People. You know, everybody, Sam. And
let me tell you who it didn't
you know,
help.
What's that?
Bureaucrats in high places.
Well, yeah, the ones that hope for bad so that then they can, I guess you could say, take advantage of it, you know. But, you know, the Q4, as they call it, fourth quarter, they say the gross domestic product, that's the value of all goods and services produced in the U.S., adjusted for inflation, now that's got to be a tough job, expanded at an annual rate of 2.6% for the months October through December. That's according to the Commerce Department. Another one of those you'll have a hard time finding in the Constitution. It says that marked a slowdown from the 3.4% growth registered July through September and the booming rate.
Hey, what happens when you average
in April through June? Well, the
you're
bottom
right
line
on about
is,
3%, buddy.
And it's certainly way better than what we experienced with our beloved Obama economy. They say it's the weakest growth rate since the first quarter of 2018.
Now stop. You see how they manipulate that? They're just playing games, man.
But then it says it was faster than expected. Economists had expected the Commerce Department to report a 2.2% growth rate. The Atlanta Fed's model had pointed to even weaker growth for just 1.8%. Now the thing to me, Sam, is I'm amazed that we had any improvement at all with the way the media was just beating up on everything and trying to make everything go down and look bad.
I agree.
That's all part of their
and
way
usually,
of getting their guys in.
You're right. And usually they look back about, hey, it's worse than this or better than that. Now they're even looking forward kind of thing right now to try to find the worst.
Right.
Okay, so it stuttered after Christmas a little bit. Okay, but what they're trying to do is just manipulate the way they report the data. They never report it the way they're doing right now to try to make it sound like the weakest. But they even admit it's better than expected. So I mean, it's just amazing. We couldn't get 3%. Now you average it as 3%. Now it's better than expected, but yet it's bad, right? That's what they want you to believe. I mean, it's just psychotic, Kurt.
It's like when they do that whole, you know, we're doing cuts in Washington, D.C. We were going to increase it by 15%. We only went up 10%, so we did a cut. You know, they say economists, this is a Breitbart piece, so, you know, frankly, you're going to find it to be more appreciative of the president. And even though, you know, it's that way, you got to watch out, too.
And not only more appreciative of the president, Kurt, but a little bit more aligned with the truth right there now.
Well, that's what I think. It says economists think the economy will continue to grow throughout 2019 thanks to a very strong labor market that continues to enjoy ultra-low unemployment rates, robust job growth, and steady wage growth. Now, the Federal Reserve, and I would say that beloved institution, pivoted in January from a policy of gradually raising rates to one of patience. By the way, remember, they didn't raise the rates one bit with Obama. It says a move which many see as supporting further growth, and that has buoyed financial markets at the start of the year. The, you know, in my opinion, they buoyed themselves in spite of the Fed, not because of the Fed. And it says the Fed predicts GDP will grow 2.3% this year. Now, they can make it, you know, Sam, where the economy doesn't grow at all. That's what the evil thing of the Fed is, if you ask me. But, you know, that all goes to that honest money thing that you talk about so often, right, Sam?
Yeah, there you go again. Hanging out with me and bringing up stuff like that. You know,
imagine
good work.
That.
We need more of it, folks, because I'm telling you right now. Now, don't, I want people to understand clearly. You know, we're quite positive on a lot of things. And I know a lot of conservatives would say, Sam, why are you positive? Don't you know this and don't you know that and don't you know? Okay, I know about a lot of negative. I get it. And I know that negative's still there. I get it. And I know in many ways it seems more negative than positive. I get it. But I'm also not going to let the negative eclipse the positive to where we go negative. Because I don't think that's of any value. I'll give you an example. You know what? The economy's got a lot of problems. And I know that you can point to, hey, people aren't making enough money, and people are in debt more than ever. And you can look at all the other side of the coins where more people are in credit card debt, more people are in student debt, more people are in business debt, farmers are in debt to their eyeballs. I get it. And that is negative. I agree. And it is a counterpoint to the points we're making. But it doesn't change the fact that still I can walk down the street and I have a job, and I'm grateful for both of those things. And others, more people can walk down the street and have a job. And food stamps are slightly less. And, okay, so we cannot always take a positive and force it negative. We need to be smart enough to acknowledge the bad, but yet to focus on the positive and to see how we can get more positive out of it. All right, so there's this lady. She's, I don't know, hanging out, and she assaulted some dude, right, Kurt?
That's right. This guy was basically committing the cardinal sin. I mean, he had a Make America Great Again hat on. And this lady who, you know, I mean, I was surprised, but according to Boston 25 News, she's a Brazilian national. So that means, you know, she's not what you'd think. I mean, at least most people, I believe, think it's just the Mexicans, you know, that are doing, you know, having this problem. But she's a Brazilian national.
All over the world, buddy.
I agree that she was arrested for assaulting this guy wearing this hat.
Now, let me just stop you there. Wearing hats,
yes.
Good thing. Freedom to choose to wear hats, good. Assaulting people, bad, Kurt.
Bad. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
And they found out she was here illegally, Sam, and the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement officials took Rosianne Santos, 41 years old, into custody. The deportation, says deportation officers with ICE's fugitive operations team arrested Rosie Santos, an unlawfully present citizen of Brazil. Santos is facing local charges for assault and other offenses. She's presently,
by the way, Kurt,
in
she should.
Yeah,
you can't assault
she's
people,
presently
man.
In ICE custody and has been. Yeah, she's on ICE.
Now, by the way, those women's wearing those vagina hats, Kurt. I never thought of assaulting a single one of them, no matter how much I disagree with what they're doing.
Amen to that.
I never thought of assaulting one of them.
Yeah. And so she resided in Falmouth, Massachusetts. It's F-A-L-M-O-U-T-H. Now, you'd think the best way of this story would have been she said something evil, because if she's from Falmouth, you know. But anyway, she'd been arrested by police several days earlier on charges of assault, battery, and disorderly conduct for allegedly harassing and assaulting a 23-year-old man wearing this red Make America Great Again cap. The victim's name, well, anyway, it doesn't matter.
What matters is this, though. Assault's got to stop. And yeah, we need to learn to disagree agreeably in America. And I'm telling you, I don't know that I could disagree with the vagina hats more than I do.
She said she was actually the victim, by the way, in court.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm kind of thinking, well, that's because she said she felt discriminated against.
Wow. Well,
yeah,
hey, she won't be discriminated wherever she's deported to, will she, Kurt? No discrimination over there.
No.
By the way, Motor City MAGA. I mean, this is MAGA country, Kurt. Now, I'm only saying that because that's the way this tries to rhyme, right? Motor City MAGA.
That's what they do, yeah.
It's really Motor City Make America Great Again is how I would look at it. Maybe we can bring back car manufacturing, huh, Kurt?
Well, yeah, Sam. I mean, just imagine that. Apparently, you know, they got people going to work with jobs and all that kind of stuff. And the guys in Detroit are having jobs, and it's just pretty cool to see, you know?
Amen.
Coming back.
This is MAGA country, and anybody can get a job.
Wow.
Woo. I don't like to use the term MAGA, but when it relates with motor, kind of motor MAGA kind of fun.
Yeah, that's right. Several of the headlines that go together on that with Breitbart. Fiat Chrysler to reopen idle Detroit plant. Chrysler to invest $4.5 billion in Michigan, create 6,500 jobs. I mean, that kind of stuff, you know, like we talk about copycat or what would you call it, side effects. You know, this is a side effects of lowering taxes so that then companies
Reagan
want
had
to
a term
bring
for this.
Back
remember
their
what it
money.
Was?
Oh, they called it trickle-down economics,
yes,
or whatever.
I kind of see it
but
trickling
to
down.
To me,
but
it's not so trickling. It's just like, whew,
well, hey,
massive,
the trickle's just getting bigger. Know? We just don't want to acknowledge how big it is. Come on.
Yeah. Anyway, it's cool to see. Huh?
It is cool. And I hope there's more of it. Chrysler to invest $4.5 billion in Michigan.
Yeah.
It's a start, Kurt. I know it's not enough.
Well, yeah, but we're heading in the right direction. And just imagine if we truly wanted to make America great again, we just do it with every issue. Wow.
Yeah. I guess there's good news, too, if we believe the Supreme Court might do some good, Kurt. I hope
well, yeah.
we get this
I mean,
done, buddy.
It's kind of crazy, but they're actually saying that people can leave up like a peace cross. And you don't have to just take down everything that somebody gets ticked off about, you know. I mean, imagine
you know my
the
response
Supreme
is?
Court saying.
Judge Roy know. Moore gets vindicated again.
Amen to that.
Well, I'm just saying, didn't it all start with the Ten Commandments? Kind of an idea back in the day, years and years and years ago. And now we're kind of debating the same kind of discussions. And this time the Supreme Court says, let her rock and roll. It's fine. It isn't establishing a specific religion. I mean, what religion is it? The Baptists would say it ain't the Mormons. The Mormons would say it isn't the Baptists, and the Methodists would say, I don't agree with either of you two, and Protestants would say, I'm Protestant, and the Catholics would say, I just want to be friends, and, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to make a division between those different Christian groups. What I'm trying to highlight is they're not the same religion, and they don't have the same theological viewpoints either, never mind the fact that they can work together.
I guess this thing was a 93-year-old war memorial that they put up, and it stands on public land in Maryland. This cross it was erected by the American Legion as a monument to men who died in World War I.
Wow.
The cross has been owned and maintained by a state parks commission since 1961. Atheists claim in a lawsuit that the monument, known as the Peace Cross, violated the Constitution's ban on the establishment of religion.
You know what I'd recommend the atheists do?
Move to another country.
Well, I just think they should just go by the cross, and they should just meditate, and they should just think how grateful they are to live in a country that supports their right to not believe.
Yeah, amen to that.
Because I support their right. I don't agree with them, but I support their right not to believe.
Yeah.
How about you, Kurt?
I do.
Wow, man. We maybe we got to give them a Make America Great Again hat and celebrate. Come on. All right. Thanks for being alongside with the ride. Sure. Hopefully it was educational and entertaining. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live. LibertyRoundtable.com. Donate today. Every penny will be used to grow our presence in the media. And we declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.